Megan Kamerick is a journalist in public TV, radio, print and online. She is a freelance reporter, a producer based in New Mexico and contributor to Woman's Focus. Megan is passionate about getting women voices into media and is the former president of Journalism and Women Symposium. She is on the board Society of Professional Journalists Rio Grande chapter. Megan Kamerick is also a TED speaker coach.
Watintabafazi, watintimboboko, which means you strike a woman, you strike a rock. And that's what I grew up with.
Super, do not problem.
Nothing can stop me in this mission, in this campaign of education.
You're listening to Gender Talks. Hi, Megan. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I thank you. You gave a TED talk on women and media. Why is it so important to bring women into media? Why are you so passionate about it?
Well, because, and I gave my talk, I should say, in 2011. And it's interesting, you're asking, I'm just preparing a presentation for an online seminar I'm doing. And so I had to go look up some of the stats, the data on women. And right now I'm only looking at the United States. So I apologize, I don't have the international data right in front of me, but we're still lagging in women who are producing news, what they cover in leadership positions. And it's even worse for women of color. So that's important to say as well. We're not getting the perspectives that we need to of a large majority of our communities. So it's impacting the basis of the news that we get. It's impacting our picture of reality based on our news coverage.
What are the numbers?
Well, looking at the Women's Media Center puts out a report every year about women in media, and it's pretty comprehensive. It looks not only at news, they also look at film, which is even worse than we are. But anyway, for example, in evening broadcasts, it's about 37% women versus 63% men. For number of women in print outlets, about 41% of women versus 59% of men. The internet, which is supposed to be the big paradigm shift, the patterns replicate themselves, 40% of women producing news versus 60% of men. And it's even worse for women of color. Women of color, for talking about who's delivering the news, who is reporting the news in print outlets, women of color are about 8%. And so it's quite bad. And it also depends on what they report on. I'm glad that I think health sometimes was seen as a soft beat. It sure isn't right now in the middle of a pandemic. So I'm glad to see that the stories that are done on health tend to be more of a larger majority of women doing those. But we look at things like US policy, science and environment, international news, business. We're still seeing that women are producing less on those beats. And one of the most egregious areas is opinion columns, so op-eds, as we call them, where women are expressing opinions and policy suggestions, and that the numbers are just terrible. I'm looking at the Women's Media Center Foundation, and it's, I guess, their latest from 2016, in the New York Times, 23% of opinion columns written by women, Washington Post, 24%, the LA Times, 17%. So we're not seeing it normalized for women to put forth policy prescriptions and suggestions. And that's problematic because I can't think of a better year than right now when we have the equivalent of the Great Depression, the 1918 pandemic, and the civil rights movement all in the same year. So we need all the ideas at the table. And we need all the perspectives in our news coverage to make sure we're getting the information that we all need.
What are the woman issues on media nowadays?
So I think it's important to note that we still lag in women moving into leadership positions. So there's a lot of issues. There's that, because then you're setting the editorial agenda. What are you going to cover? Who are you going to talk to? Are you getting a diversity of sources in your stories? There are other issues. The Women's Media Center also put out a report, I believe late last year or earlier this year, about threats and online harassment against women. And this is a very serious issue. Actually, my second TED Talk, I delve into that. That did not go up on the national platform, but it's on my website. It's from TEDxABQ, because that was in 2012, and this was just an issue starting to come to the surface, and it's really exploded since then. So, of course, everyone gets horrible things, depending on what you're doing, online, on Twitter. But when you're a female journalist, and if you dare to go into areas where, quote, you're not supposed to be, like sports or economics, the vitriol can be really horrible. And it's not just hate, there's a specific gendered quality to it, to things like what you look like, threats of rape, you know, threats of violence because you're doing something. And it's, I don't know what it's like. I realize in the US, we tend to live in a bubble. Right now, we're in a time of incredible divisiveness and vitriol in our country politically. So these things come to the fore even more, honestly. And God help you if you're a woman of color doing the same thing, because then it's just twice as bad. It's racist and sexist. So these are, I mean, those are some things. And it's also the work-life balance. As I'm sure you and your audience know, this pandemic has affected women more heavily than men. For all the inequities in our societies are coming to the fore because of this pandemic. So women are the ones with the low wage frontline service jobs, and those are the first ones to go away. Now, at least here in the US, we're not gonna have school in person. So we're gonna, in most places, we're gonna continue virtual schooling. I don't have children, but I can imagine trying to balance working at home. If you're doing that, some people do have to go back to work, but now you have your kids and they've gotta be online schooled. And somehow you've got to be a teacher and a mom and a career woman. And it's adding to the load of unpaid work that women have. So that's not true for just women in media, but I'm in a cohort right now called 50 Women Take the Lead with women from all over the country in media. And we just heard a really fascinating presentation by a young woman at a top network in broadcast news. And I mean, there are still sacrifices you make. She just ended her 8-year relationship ended, and she was under an incredible amount of stress. She's also accomplished amazing things, especially in terms of getting management to understand why you need more diverse voices reporting stories. And now they've taken her ideas and they're making big announcements about what they're going to do. She didn't get paid for any of that. And they're not advancing her ideas as her own. Do you know what I'm saying? So it's the burdens of it continue with all of those stressors that women in general continue to feel. But media can be a fairly brutal business if you're trying to succeed. Plus, we have the business model underlying most media, which is advertising pays for whatever, airtime, the amount of print for stories you get, that's all gone. It hasn't gone away, but it's significantly diminished because of shifts to social media. No one has classified ads anymore. Craigslist took those. A lot of people don't advertise anymore. They use their Facebook page. So that all impacts media. And there are some other models in other places in Europe. So, at least in the US, where most outlets rely on that model, unless they're nonprofits and have grant funding or membership, such as public media, it's a real problem. So there's fewer jobs. We're all doing more with less. And if you're a parent, now your kids are at home and you're trying to make them do their assignments on Zoom or whatever. So, you know, it's there are a lot of things. So it's some of it's only women in media, but it's also part and parcel of what working women face all the time. So,
you've been a journalist for 25 years. Why is it so important for us to challenge our preconceived notions about feminism, for example?
I think that it's easy to feel like the battles are won, and certainly we've come a long way, and it's important to remember that. But I think it's pretty obvious that there's still a lot to do. I mean, why aren't there more? Why are the numbers still, they haven't moved that much from when I gave this talk. I haven't updated all of them, but that's problematic. People have maybe some preconceived notions about what feminism is, and even of women who will say, I'm not a feminist. I think it comes from a misconception. Like, I'm not sure what you think feminism is. It's basically to be treated equally and paid equally as men. It's like the Equal Rights Amendment, which never passed here, but is pretty simple wording, you know, that Congress will make no, I can't remember the wording now, but it's a very simple amendment, will make no law.
Actually, feminism shouldn't exist because we should all be equal.
We should be, but we're not. I think there was a feeling in 2008 when we elected Barack Obama that we had moved to a new phase in our country, that we were less racist. The last 4 years has shown us that that is not true. And it's not the same thing as women's rights, but it's of a piece. It's easy to assume that we don't need some of those protections, but we do, and we don't have them yet. Because they can be taken, unless they're in statute, in our constitution, they can be taken away through a variety of means. So, I think that people misunderstand what feminism is. They equate it with when the large TED organization put my talk on the national platform, a lot more people saw it, a lot more people commented on it. And that's when some men's rights groups started telling me that I was guilty of, it's a word called misandry, which I'd never heard of, but it means man-hating. Nothing I said is about hating men. Nothing. But when people advocate for their rights, another group feels that you're taking away theirs for some reason. And that's unfortunate. But that's not true. That's not what I'm advocating. There's enough for all of us. And we could also create even more if all of us have a piece of that pie. So it needs to be looked upon not with such this scarcity mindset. Like, I have to hold on to mine. What would the world be like if we understood that if we all have a part in our outcome, we can generate even more ideas and solutions. So
love creates love.
Yeah.
What is the most exciting story about gender that you came across with?
Most exciting story about gender. That's interesting. Boy. You know, I think I'm always interested personally in stories that tell me something that I didn't know or make me rethink assumptions that maybe I didn't even know I had. So I always like to be open to that. And I like stories. I was a fellow with the Solutions Journalism Network, which is a wonderful resource. It's called solutionsjournalism.org. It has a huge bank of stories from all over the world about people responding to problems, successfully or not. And some of the most inspiring ones I saw were how women were responding to community problems. So actually, some of the most inspiring reporting I've done has been about women who come to the Santa Fe International Folk Art Market every year here in New Mexico. And they're usually from cooperatives. And they are usually coming to sell amazing crafts that are part of their culture, perhaps have been almost wiped out. I interviewed one woman from Cambodia. The Khmer Rouge almost wiped out any knowledge of doing silk in terms of scarves. There were a few people who carried that knowledge, but in the 70s, they almost killed them all. So they are the culture keepers in that respect, but not only that, many people who work in international development and who work here with low-income communities know that if you give women resources, they raise up the whole family. And this is what has happened with a lot of the women who come to this market. They get training on how to market their stuff to the West and sell it for more money and get that income back into their villages. And they use it to build housing, to send their children to school, to improve sanitation. And I find those stories so inspiring because not only are they keeping incredibly important cultural things and arts, but they're also advancing the whole society. There is a cooperative that would come to the folk art market in Santa Fe from Rwanda every year. And they make just exquisite baskets. They're beautiful. And it was created after the Civil War in the 90s. Actually, it wasn't a civil war. It was an ethnic cleansing, basically, in the 90s. So it was Hutu and Tutsi women who all lost people. And they came together to form this cooperative. They needed income because they'd lost their men, but to also heal. So they can go work across ethnic lines and heal and build this cooperative. So, I mean, it's beautiful. And that's the power of advancing women economically in the world. So that's some of the most inspiring stories I've done about gender and women.
Megan, thank you so much.
Thank you, Susanna.